Welcome to The Jump. I am here with our ESPN NBA writer, Malika Andrews, and the host of the Low Post podcast, Mr. Zach Lowe. Welcome, friends. Not only will we have Sun center DeAndre Ayton later on in the show, but we're going to talk a little Nets. They moved atop the East last night despite yet another injury, this time to James Harden. Will the Nets star trio be able to get enough games together to make a prep and run for the playoffs? I'm not concerned with that talented trio, but we'll talk about it. And let's start in L.A., though. Not only did all three Antetokounmpo brothers face each other, play on the court together, Giannis said later it was one of the best moments of his basketball life. But Andre Drummond made his Lakers debut and then promptly injured his toe. He said later his entire toenail came off by halftime. He missed the second half. The Bucks went on to win. Now, I will say Markieff Morris stayed optimistic post-game. Take a listen.
Should just make for a better out, for a better ending. That's how we look at it. Everybody be back healthy. You're not worried about the toe. It just lines up for a great ending, a great, you know, ride off into the sunset, championship win again.
Now, a little later in that same press conference, Markieff said, hey, I hope the league knows that LeBron and AD are just resting up right now. I hope everyone knows what they're ready for. Zach, do you share Markieff's optimism here? Because, yes, they are still sort of safely in the middle of the West playoff bracket, but they only sit four games out of the play-in right now. And once you get into a single elimination or double elimination situation, anything can happen in a game or two, right?
Yeah, I'm with you, Rach. I'm totally confident in the Lakers. If A, they're healthy when it matters, and B, they stay out of the play-in. And it's easy to say, well, who cares if they're in the play-in? They'll win the play-in. Anytime you're in a one-and-done or two-and-done situation, you are one big Zion game, one cold LeBron game, one twisted ankle away from being out of the playoffs, which would be a disaster. As long as they stay out of that, I share their optimism. I still think they should be considered the favorites. They've earned that. They've earned that benefit of the doubt. But they're not going to have a run now where they face an under 500 eight seed in the first round like they had last year. Right now, they're slated to go Denver, Utah, Clippers, or something like that just to get out of the West. And that is a murderer's row with no margin for error at all.
Well, Rachel, Markieff's sentiment of having it be a little bit better, have a better ending than they have right now, I sure hope that's the case for the sake of the league. But they're not the only team that is in this boat, right? There are plenty of teams that have these injuries to their star players that are looking around saying, when we get them back, when they come back, it's going to be a little bit different. But riding off into the championship for a sunset, as Zach just said, that's going to be a little bit more challenging. I can think of a handful of teams that may have something to say about that. Even when Andre Drummond is healthy again, his toenail, I mean, I am a baby about a hangnail, so I can't imagine having my whole big toenail taken completely off. But even when he is healthy, when LeBron James is healthy, when Anthony Davis is healthy, there are other teams that are looking at the Lakers with a target on their back, even with those injuries. So riding off into the sunset, that's where I'm going to say maybe we're going to just need to pause for a second.
Well, I give Dre a lot of credit. He came and did media with us after the game, and he described in detail, friends, in great detail, how Brook Lopez, which is 285 pounds of human, landed on his foot, and then him taking off the shoe, taking off the sock, and revealing, as he put it, my toenail was gone. And Markieff Morris followed him in the press conference and mentioned he had had a similar injury. He said now he was able to come back and play the next game. So we don't know what that means for Drummond, but hopefully he'll be able to come back and play with this. But as Markieff said, it hurt and affected him for about a month and a half. He said you don't realize how much your toe and the top of your toe scrapes your shoe and kind of is affected in all your basketball movements. So another injury bug issue for the Lakers. We will, of course, be following that. And let's talk about the Nets because they had an injury scare of their own last night. James Harden leaving Brooklyn's win over the Rockets after three quarters due to a little tightness in that right hamstring. Now, the win did move the Nets to the top seed in the East, completely passing Philly. They've been sort of dancing around each other and tied for a while. Malika, what is the latest with James?
Well, James Harden, Rachel, has been ruled out tonight with that same right hamstring tightness. After the game yesterday, Steve Nash said that he felt confident that this wouldn't be a long-term injury. But for Nets fans, that can be a little bit triggering because they've heard that before with several key players, like with Kevin Durant, Landry Shamet. They said it wasn't going to be long-term. That was a week and a half that he was out with his ankle injury. He's also slated to return tonight. The sliver of good news, maybe, for Brooklyn is that LaMarcus Aldridge is slated to make his Nets debut tonight against Charlotte. But remember, you guys both know James Harden is a player that you have to hold him back from being on the court. He takes so much pride in being consistently available for his teammates. When he's hurt his neck earlier this month, Steve Nash said that he had to protect him from himself and hold him out for a game. So if James Harden has anything to say about it, I'm sure it's going to be a little bit of a battle for Steve Nash to hold him out for more than just a game, maybe two, because that's the type of player that James Harden is.
Yeah, James likes to play. Obviously, he's got an MVP campaign he's in the middle of. But the Nets, as an organization, you understand why their instinct is to play it safe. They can. They have that luxury. They are still playing so well. And the idea is, of course, to be healthy for the playoffs. They've taken that strategy, of course, with the Kevin Durant injury. He's got that hamstring issue. They've only played seven games where all KD, Kyrie, and James have taken the court together. That's just crazy. And as ESPN Stats and Info points out, every big three that has won a title going back to the 80s has played at least 42 games together during the regular season. So, Zach, they're certainly not going to get anywhere close to that 42-game number, but do you think whatever that number ends up being, they will have enough reps playing together before the playoffs?
I do. I'm shockingly unworried about this, considering I worry about everything, like being struck by lightning when I walk out of my house. To me, the biggest thing that has happened in Brooklyn so far is that Kyrie Irving has given the offense to James Harden and said, hey, look, I'll be off to the side, setting flare screens. I'll run the show when you sit. I will get my 25, my 30, because I'm ridiculously efficient. That's already happened. And Kevin Durant is the most malleable, easy to fit superstar amplifier of other superstars, maybe in the modern history of the NBA. You just plug him in, he can set screens, he can post up, he can spot up. He just walks on the floor and gets 25 points without dominating the ball, without needing all that much action called for him. So to me, he's the easiest part, and the fact that the easiest part has been the one missing makes me optimistic that the Nets will be able to build enough momentum and enough sort of time together to make the run they want to make.
Rachel, I'm the self-anointed queen of worry.
I was going to say, I think of the three of us, we have the all-worry team on this show. I'm going to give the viewers a little delve into our personal lives. We're all friends, and I can tell you that we have the all-time worriers on the show today. You feel, though, Malika, you're not worried either, like Zach.
I think we should get T-shirts that say we're the all-time worry team. But I don't feel like I am worried about what they're going to be able to do, because Steve Nash had said since the get-go that Kevin Durant may be the key to making all of this work because he is the most versatile player. But then exactly what Zach said happened. James Harden has sort of taken over driving the offense, and Kyrie Irving and him have gelled so well together. What Steve Nash has said is, yes, we wish we had more time. We wish we had all season to be working on our chemistry and gelling, but we have so much talent that at this point, the only option we have really is to believe in it. And James Harden said that he's going to need to take the mentality of, we're trying to figure this out. This is a Rubik's Cube. We're going to need to figure it out on the fly. This is a team that already doesn't practice a whole lot, so they're going to be leaning into film and making it work, but the amount of talent they have gives them confidence. I've been told over and over again that this is going to be able to work when Kevin Durant comes back, which they're hoping is imminent.
Yeah, look, elite talent in this league trumps everything else. It's true when you have matchup situations in the playoffs. It's true when you have a matchup between a team and an injury situation. Kevin Durant historically comes back from injuries so sharp. We just haven't seen even major injuries he's come off of, any kind of slump or any kind of warming up. And then, of course, you have to also remember KD and James played together for a long time. So I know that was a long time ago, but a shared history, an understanding of what the other wants to do on a basketball basketball court, how they move. You don't lose that. So I don't think they're starting from scratch here, which is the other sort of key thing to remember when you're trying to make predictions about how all this is going to go. Now, we also have the new guys, right? Over the month of March, former All-Stars like Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Andre Drummond, they've all made their way from buyouts to contenders. You got the Nets and the Lakers, of course, getting all the headlines there. Aldridge expected to make his Nets debut tonight. Even before these moves, as Kirk Goldsberry noted, nearly half of all active NBA players who've ever been named first team All-NBA now play for either the Lakers, Clippers, or Nets. So, Malika, do you think the way the buyout system now is working as it should?
Well, here's what I'll say, Rachel. I understand why maybe management, general managers in smaller markets are looking around saying, hey, wait a second, potentially this isn't fair the way that it is shaking out. Our Adrian Wojnarowski had a great piece about this on ESPN Plus today. And I want to read some numbers that I found just as striking as the numbers that you shared from Kirk Goldsberry just a second ago, that over the past 15 seasons, Rachel, 39 buyout players averaged 2 games and just 10 minutes in the playoffs, and 20 signed to top 15 markets, but the other 19, they signed to everywhere else. So actually it is shaking out to be a little bit more 50-50, but I do understand the frustration and the optics. And yes, this is a little bit of a loophole that maybe isn't working out as initially intended, but as Wojnarowski reported, this is something that, Zach, I'm sure you have more to say about this, should probably be addressed in the next looking at the CBA.
Well, look, in terms of addressing it, I haven't heard any solution that the players' union would ever go for, because the bottom line is this is about player movement and players being able to choose where they're going to go. So if you start limiting, like, you can't do this, you can't do that, the union is not going for that. Second of all, teams with cap space and trade exceptions and money to spend can already try to entice these players with more money than the glamour teams can offer them. The Knicks could have paid Andre Drummond like $12 million a year if they wanted Andre Drummond. And look, as Malika said, the buyout guys, they rarely have any impact on who wins the title anyway. We're blowing this way out of proportion, and they tend to go to good teams. Now, is there some overlap sometimes between good teams and glamour cities? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But it's the quality of the team that matters. The other thing is, these teams don't have to buy these guys out. I don't buy the argument that small market GMs are out there cowering in fear of agents who are never going to forgive them for not buying out Andre Drummond. And on top of that, the league has incentivized bad teams to keep good players because they've flattened the lottery odds and created a play-in tournament. And the messaging of that is, San Antonio, if you think LaMarcus Aldridge is good, keep him. Cleveland, if you think Andre Drummond is good, yeah, you got Jared Allen, keep him anyway. And these teams are doing the opposite anyway, and the league has sort of incentivized them to keep those guys, and they're not doing it. And the other thing is, the last thing, we're hearing all this outrage this week about LaMarcus Aldridge in Brooklyn, Blake Griffin in Brooklyn, and blah, blah, blah. We're not hearing anything about Gorgui Dieng going to San Antonio, and we're not hearing anything about the Oklahoma City Thunder and Al Horford basically saying, hey, it's been nice having you. We're not going to buy you out. We're not going to trade you. We just don't want to win games, so why don't you just sort of become a coach for a little while? No one is outraged about that. No one is clamoring for Al Horford to get back on the court because it's a small market team in Oklahoma City that is the victim of this larger thing. I just think this is being blown way out of proportion.
Well, there's been a backlash, right? So there's a lot of fans who have said, huge backlash. The Nets are loaded up. This isn't fair. Here we go again. Another super team, and then it's boring. We know who wins. We can't really follow the games in the same way. And then there's been a backlash to the backlash. You've had a lot of people who cover the NBA saying, these fans, they don't understand. Guys don't really impact the finals, or they don't really impact the playoffs in that same way. And I think maybe what the initial fans who are upset, what their feeling is, it's kind of like getting an SAT tutor, right? If you get an SAT tutor when you're in high school to get into college, that's not going to make the difference about whether you get into college or not. If you don't study yourself for the SATs, you don't do well. SATs are just one part of your college admissions package. So it's not the thing, kind of like Blake Griffin is not the thing that is going to win you the NBA title. But if you are a kid who has had every advantage, every privilege, have grown up going to the best schools, surrounded by the best people with the best books and the best tutors, and then you get the SAT tutor also, I understand people being like, come on, don't you already have everything else? And I think that's what fans sometimes are feeling with this. It's not that fans are just so casual. They don't understand that Blake Griffin isn't the Blake Griffin of 5 or 7 years ago. I think there is there's just some frustration in some markets, and that's why you are not hearing this about Gorgie or anyone else, of just, don't they already have enough? Do they have to have that too? And that is a balance the NBA is going to have to get into a little bit as we go. And now we welcome in former number one overall pick, Phoenix Center, DeAndre Ayton. Welcome back to The Jump. Thanks for joining us as always.
Thank you guys for having me.
I like it. You're off day. You're at home. We can get some stuff done. We can talk a little hoop.
Yeah, you know, both talk the business.
Exactly. Both the Lakers and Clippers, they are looking up in the standings, sir, at your Suns after an incredible two-month run. You guys have won 25 of the last 31 games. Last night against the Bulls just got folded into that, another win. What has been clicking so well?
To be honest, it's just us going through the growing pains of, you know, starting to be a winning team and, you know, just approaching the game differently, adding some pieces where, you know, sophisticated guys who's used to winning, just helping us younger guys get used to that and approaching the game totally different. And, you know, it's hard to win in this league. And for us, where we're at today is incredible. And, you know, all thanks to Coach Monty and James Jones putting this team together and, you know, a great group of guys doing our thing.
It really feels like the franchise is going in the right direction, as you said, not just on the court, but in the front office, the coaching ranks. And, of course, the addition of Chris Paul clearly paid off for the entire team. And you in particular, you know, he has a history of making centers better all the way back to Tyson Chandler in New Orleans. How has he helped you this season?
He's definitely showed me different ways how to, you know, get to the basket easily, how much of a threat I am to the basket when it's in a pick and roll. Definitely angles of the screen, you know, getting us both open and just, you know, always being a presence at the rim. You know, he gave me this key to be the anchor of the defense and to let everybody know, be everybody's eyes and, you know, protecting our rim. And it's a big deal when it comes to our team. And, you know, he gets me the easy baskets. He, you know, spoon fed me most of the time and, you know, it's lit.
Well, look, before he got there, I'm sure you knew him a little bit just from playing against him, but he's the point god, right? I mean, this is Chris Paul, future Hall of Famer. Now that he is on your team, he is your friend. Give me a little CP3 story. What about him? Go back and tell your friends, or what about an experience about playing or being with him?
Definitely CP. He sees things that, you know, nobody sees. He sees the little details where, you know, he'll probably tell you more than once. And, you know, it's nothing personal, but it's just how much of a winner he is. And he just knows the game. And, you know, it's pretty easy to him. And, you know, you'll probably hear your name probably a good 3 or 4 times, you know.
Right.
But it's nothing personal. It's just, you know, he just wants to win and he wants the best for you. So, you know, I enjoy it. And I'm really honored to even have a guy like him on my team, you know, helping me out and just, you know, being a part of his legacy.
It's amazing. Look, he's going to give a Hall of Fame speech one day. You could end up being a part of that now. Now, during the pandemic, we remember you participated in that NBA 2K tournament and made it all the way to the final. Now, you didn't beat Devin Booker. I don't want to bring that up, you know, but I just want to know if he brings that up. DeAndre, does he rub that in your face at all?
Yes, he has. He always do. To be honest, you know, I think I let him in. No, I'm playing. But, you know, every time I ask him to play, he always brings it up, you know, what happened in a 2K tournament, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, yeah, I'm going to have to hug that one and just take the L. But, you know, D-Book is a gamer. He's a competitor, and I can tell you that. And,
yes.
You know, he just knows. He just loves to win.
I smell a rematch this summer. That's all I'm going to say.
Definitely.
He's got to accept the challenge. So... just saying. I want to go back to February. There was a moment where your teammate Frank Kaminsky, and you know what I'm going to say, he rocked one of your chains. Here is what he said when asked about it. Take a listen.
Man, you're wearing DA's chain right now?
I was waiting for somebody to ask. Yeah.
Is there any specific reason for it?
No. I just asked if I could put it on, and he said yes. So, I mean, I feel a little like responsible now with this thing on. I've never had this kind of jewelry on before. I'm not really into jewelry, so I'm just trying to keep it clean until I give it back to him.
I need to really, this is my investigative reporting now. How did this happen? Why did you let him have it? How do you feel he looked with it? And was there any damage when you got it back? These are my questions.
Well, first, he definitely took care of the chain.
Okay.
After the game, I was putting it on, and he was like, "Hey, DA, I'm about to go do this press conference. Can I use your chain?" I was like, "Definitely, go ahead." And, you know, right away, you know, he's a big guy, too, and the chain fit him so well. But I just know for a fact Frank would never, ever go ahead and buy a chain out like that.
Yeah.
But just him wearing it was just Yes, they're just very funny.
It's high comedy right there. Amazing. And also a sign of just good camaraderie between you guys.
Yeah.
You got to do things to liven up the deep parts of the season. You also did something very cool recently. In honor of Women's History Month, you wore custom shoes featuring the names of the Phoenix Mercury. Of course, your co-tenants there from the WNBA. Why did you choose to honor them that way?
Most definitely. You know, women in my life personally are very important. You know, my mom done so much for me. And, you know, just growing up, having her with me in the United States taking care of me and my little sister, it's, you know, just my little thank you and a little appreciation, you know, having the whole Mercury roster on my left shoe and all the women like my aunties and my mom, my little sisters on my right shoe. And just, you know, I'm playing for them, not only playing for myself. And, you know, I just wanted to show my little thank you and appreciation to them to show that, you know, they mean more than anything.
Shout out all the NBA moms. I say it all the time. None of y'all would be here if it wasn't for them. And look,
definitely.
You have the GOAT, by the way. How much of Diana Taurasi did you watch growing up?
Oh, I love her. I mean, to be honest, I got more into her when I got drafted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just finally meeting her and talking to her. My rookie year, I remember, you know, just her style. I never went by her without having a good 5 to 10 minute conversation with her, giving me advice and telling me to keep going. Even though we didn't have such a great season, she just told me to keep my head up and, you know, it's going to get better. And just giving me words of wisdom. And, you know, I didn't take those words for granted. And, you know, I really look up to her and, you know, her as a player as well. And, you know, it's just amazing being around greats like that.
That whole answer told me just how smart you are. That is exactly who you want to be taking advice from. I got to ask you an Arizona question before we go, because we've talked about this before. Half the producers on the show went to Arizona, and they put all their energy into the women's Final Four. They are ready. They are pumped. What about you? How much have you been following that?
All I can say is bear down. They doing that thing. That's all I can say. Bear down. You know, I'm seeing what they're doing. They're definitely putting on for the city of Tucson, doing better than we ever did. And, you know, just seeing the greatness they're doing out there is amazing. I knew it was going to come someday. You know, they were building their little unit out there. But I'm just happy for them.
Well, I got to tell you, if you want to get something done, ask a woman. So apparently that's what's happening at your school, too. That's all I got to say. Thanks so much for joining us, DeAndre. It's great to see you. And congratulations on the hot, hot, hot streak. We look forward to seeing it continue.
Thank you, guys.
All right. And coming up, as Steph battles through a tailbone issue, will his health keep the Warriors from them making the play-in game? Our Warriors reporter, Nick Friedell, is joining us right after the break. So stay tuned. All right. We now welcome in ESPN NBA reporter Nick Friedell behind that awesome Chicago Cubs backdrop there. We love it, Nick. I want to start with the team you cover every day, the Golden State Warriors. They got Steph Curry back in the lineup Monday night after he missed 5 games due to a tailbone injury. Steph, of course, scored 32 in that game, played 30 minutes, but he mentioned he's still feeling discomfort. So how did he look to you watching in person?
Rach, I thought he was going to be fine before the game. Then I watched and he fell a couple times and it is really still bothering him. I think it's going to linger for at least a few more weeks. If he stays healthy, they're going to the playoffs because he's still the baddest dude on the block. But he is trying to make himself not fall. That is not something you want one of the greatest shooters or the greatest shooter of all time to think about on the floor. So it is absolutely something to watch for down the stretch here.
Hey, the Warriors are a game and a half up on 11th, which means they're barely hanging into the play-in tournament, let alone the playoffs. So if he's limited at all, if he's uncomfortable at all, their margin is razor thin for the rest of the season. I'll tell you what, whether they make the playoffs or not, they are one of the most interesting teams to watch in the NBA over the next 6, 8 months, 1 year, because with James Wiseman and the potential of that Minnesota pick and their own pick and Steph Curry at age 33 and Draymond Green over 30, they have the potential to make a big trade at somewhere down the line if they decide to go that route. So we'll see what this season brings. And maybe if they fall out of the playoffs, they become more likely to make that kind of trade. I don't know. But their margin is thinner than I think people realize with the Kings and the Pelicans having surged up the standings.
think it's, as Harley passes me in New York City, I don't think it's radical at all to say that Steph Curry, his health is what the Golden State Warriors playoff chances hinges on. We've seen it before. He talked about how he didn't feel quite right. But Nick Friedell saying that that is a bad, bad man right now. If he can score 30 plus and be feeling like he was feeling, that should be a pretty good sign. But the Warriors should be pretty cautious with this. Remember, players say all the time, the one thing you really don't want to be out on the floor is feeling and being aware of your injury. You don't want to be playing like you're protecting yourself, because then you put yourself potentially at more risk to re-injure something in that case. So that's sort of the other razor thin line, as Zach was talking about, that they need to be watching for right now.
Yeah, you always got to watch out for those compensation injuries. And if you want to know how Steph is really feeling, that highlight we just showed where he fell on his butt, we had to blur out what was over his mouth because that was the curse word that he let out in that moment. And it was so loud and so clear, we had to blur it out in a highlight where you didn't even have audio. So that gives you an example, a window into Steph's mindset. Nick, let's talk a little bit more about what Zach was mentioning. How much will these final 20 games impact the Warriors' approach next season with, you've got Klay Thompson hopefully coming back, but then a lot of questions in terms of where they draft, who they draft, whether they get Minnesota's pick or not.
Rachel, allow me to jump into the worry crew here, because I am very concerned by what I see from the Warriors long term. I still think they're going to the playoffs if Steph stays healthy, but the whole feeling was Klay comes back, you plug him into the lineup, title contender again. I don't believe that at all. I think this Warriors team is still several steps away, even if they bring everybody back next season, including Kelly Oubre. It all hinges to me on James Wiseman. James Wiseman has to take another step down the stretch of the regular season here, and he's got to, after a training camp and hopefully some kind of Vegas summer league, he's got to be a lot better than what we've seen so far. And the expectations are gigantic for him, but he was the number two pick coming into a situation where this team really wanted to contend next season. If he can take that leap, they're in good shape, but I think he is a couple years away from being able to be the player they need him to be.
Well, Nick, let's talk about the other team that you used to cover. In fact, you covered them for so long. People think you're from Chicago, even though you're actually from Orlando. Their Bulls are on a 5-game losing streak. They're actually 0-3 since acquiring the guy who has also last played in Orlando, All-Star Nikola Vucevic, just before the trade deadline. Now, Zach, they're currently in 10th place, which puts them into that play-in scenario, but that's not why they made those trades. How good can the Bulls be before this season ends?
Well, in fairness, Zach LaVine, my fellow Zach, did not play in last night's loss, but I like that trade a little less for Chicago than most people seem to, but I'll say this. I think people are focusing short term. I think a big part of the reason the Bulls made that trade was for the summer of 2022-2023, when they're loaded with cap space and they could say, hey, we don't just have Zach LaVine here, assuming they extend him or re-sign him. Mm-hmm. We have two real guys here. Now, are they all NBA level superstars? Maybe not. Maybe Zach LaVine will grow into that kind of player. Nick Vucevic is awesome. They can make a case in those summers. Hey, we're Chicago. We're a big market. Have we nailed the big fish in free agency? No, but we did get Pau Gasol. We had a meeting with Carmelo Anthony. We're sitting there as a sleeping giant in free agency. And we have these two guys who might be fun for you to play with. So I think that was a big part of this trade. It wasn't just about this season and the rest of the season, but yeah, they need to start winning now because they didn't make this trade to miss the playoffs this year. They really want to get in this year, at least to the play-in.
Yeah, I was talking to a source on the Bulls earlier this afternoon, and he told me that he believes when they need to start to worry is when they get healthy again. He mentioned to me that Zach LaVine was trying to play through that ankle injury, but he just wasn't playing quite right. We also had Garrett Temple out last night. Kobe White was dealing with some neck stuff. And so when they get healthy and then they get through this next tough stretch in their schedule where they're playing against Utah, where they're playing against Brooklyn, if they're still losing after all of those factors, that's when they're going to say, oh no, okay, now we really need to worry. They obviously do not have a lot of time in the rest of the season going forward here, but the growing pains that they're experiencing right now, I was told they're chalking that up to they used to play fast and they used to play with a lot of pace, and now they're dealing with trying to integrate four big guys on the court at the same time, and that's the challenge that they're trying to overcome, but they know they don't have a lot of time to do that.
Rach, they're building up what they just tore down. They could have just kept Jimmy Butler, and he wanted to recruit, and he wanted to stay in Chicago. And I hear everybody saying, oh, but that was Garn Pax, and this is Karnisovas and Eversley. did they not change owners? Are the ownership, Jerry, Michael, they're still there, right? I mean, this is a at a ceiling right now. This is a try-hard team again. The reason they traded Jimmy was because they didn't think he could be the face, and they didn't want to go to the first or second round and get bounced. When you watch this team, as much as Zach LaVine has improved, Zach hit it. There are different levels of All-Stars. Zach LaVine at $20 million, he's outworked that contract. More power to him. Zach LaVine on a max deal for $200 million, that's a completely different conversation. And I like Vucevic, but this is your team. You traded away all your picks, and if you really wanted to win a title, I am really nervous for all my friends back in that organization because this roster screams try hard, succeed.
Well, Nick, you and I talked about this when they made the Butler trade. Gee, we're trading away Jimmy Butler for young assets and picks in the hope that 4 or 5 years from now we can maybe get a player that develops into Jimmy Butler. And yes, as you write, the level that they set that wasn't acceptable then is the level they are just trying to get back to now. Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Please give Nani, our resident grandma, our best. We are looking out for her. All right, up next on this show, we're going to discuss expectations for Victor Oladipo's Heat debut tonight. Welcome back to The Jump. Time for our League Pass game of the night. 7 games on the slate, but our producers picked out, oh yeah, Victor Oladipo's Heat debut against the Warriors. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern. Oladipo, of course, came in that trade from Houston after the Rockets acquired him in the first place from the Pacers earlier this season. Here's Oladipo today on his very first conversation with Pat Riley. Take a listen.
My first conversation with Coach Riley was defense, defense, defense. You know, that's pretty much what we talked about is coming in and defending at a high level. And it's pretty amazing to have, you know, such a legendary human being, you know, believe in your ability. And, you know, he wants me to come in here and he wants me to defend.
Well, Zach, we remember, of course, when LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh teared up. It's the first time Pat Riley had the first entire week of training camp with Eric Spoelstra be about defense. So it's good to know. Never change, Pat. What are your expectations for Oladipo in his Heat debut tonight?
I mean, it's cool to hear defense, defense, defense. What the Heat need is offense, offense, offense. Their offense is stuck in mud. Starting Goran Dragic will help. And I think Victor Oladipo, I expect a ton of effort, a ton of energy and intensity because this guy has something to prove now. After two teams have traded him away, extension deals haven't worked out, he's got to prove that he's still the player or close to the player he was when he made All-NBA. And I think he can fit really well in Miami. If you watch the Heat play, it feels like it takes them too long into games to get to their very best lineups. There's always too many non-shooters or non-threats or too many defensive liabilities. He has a chance to balance them out a little bit if he can really find his offense there, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Well, and Zach, today he said, I have a chip on my shoulder. I have a lot to prove. He said, I spend the off seasons in Miami. Obviously, I've been linked to Miami for a long time. So I expect to see a happier Oladipo that lead to a vintage Oladipo. Let's see that. That is what the league wants to see. Right, Rachel?
Well, look, what kind of Victor Oladipo they get really could change the balance in the East and who makes it past the first, second round. So it will be fascinating. I want to offer up a quick congratulations, guys. LaMelo Ball is so good that he won Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, even though he got hurt. Congratulations also to Ant Edwards on the other side. And happy birthday to producer Jesse. It's his birthday today. And for that, he's going to get to go home now. So we'll be back tomorrow. Bye.
Go UConn!